Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, Lulz is back after our 1 week hiatus, and we have the NFL draft tonight. Brian apparently hearing some hot Chicago Bears trade rumors that he's going to fill us in on. And we'll talk a little previewing of best ball summer. There's been some updates to Brick's Draft Caddy. I just put out a big strategy video on the Deposit Kingdom channel. Also wanted to talk about a really cool article that Sacrilegious put out about diversification and portfolio. So we'll get into all of that good stuff on today's Lulz with Pete and Brick.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
So you were telling me right before we went live that the inside rumor is that the painted fingernails finally got to the Chicago Bears front office, and they will be passing on Caleb Williams first overall, the draft a real man.
That's right. It's who are they? They're going to take Brock Bowers, number one overall.
Can you imagine if you had that scoop? You know, it's like minus 20,000 that they take Caleb Williams. Like, if you somehow got that scoop and you beat Schefter, you beat Rappaport to market that they're going, going a different direction.
Yeah. I saw, Maddox tweeted something like Jalen Daniels is, I can't remember what he phrased it. Like, you know, but the market says minus one, 500.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, probably because someone from the front office leaked to some bettors that they're taking.
It is a wild market when you think about how it's like, what, probably the biggest like information based market out there, at least within sports, right? Like, is there anything else where there aren't like randomized things happening within the field of play that like determine the outcome?
Right. Yeah. So that's pretty juicy info. If you can figure out who's going to be taken where, for sure.
Two hats, your big Chicago fandom hat outside of Caleb Williams. What do you want the team to do at nine?
Because DFS, I want wide receiver. I want Brock Bowers, maybe if Neighbors falls, or who's the Northwestern guy? The wide receiver, Ozuna or whatever.
Washington, Odunze. Yeah,
Washington. Washington. Yeah.
I was like, is there a Northwestern prospect in the top 10? I was like,
Why did I think Northwestern? I don't know. Brian Thomas seems like he's falling, I guess.
Yeah.
A little bit, but I would have been fine with him. It's any DFS-related flair.
Exactly. I mean, it will be super fun. If they draft a wide receiver, Brock Bowers, and all of a sudden it's like, holy cow, new franchise quarterback, Keenan, DJ Moore, and a new rookie.
I mean, it'll be fun. You know, the worst will be like a player who actually helps the team win. but I don't care about, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, oh, great, a defensive tackle. Fun.
Well, I feel like the interests of, like, fantasy fans and actual NFL front offices, like, have been more closely aligned over the previous years. Like, I always think the big example, it was when the Bengals were deciding whether to take that lineman, Penei Sewell, to protect Joe Burrow or draft Ja'Marr Chase, who's now like a top three wide receiver in the league. And all the like hardcore football guys are like, you got to take Penei Sewell to like protect Joe Burrow. And it's like, you know what? Actually, drafting the really, really good wide receiver prospect ended up being the correct decision.
Yeah. And maybe a lot of those sacks are on Joe Burrow.
True.
You know, and they realize that, and they're like, it doesn't matter if we take a tight end or a tackle, he's still going to get sacked all the time.
Did you, have you placed any wagers on draft outcomes?
I did a couple of those ETR ones.
Yeah.
That they pop in their Discord. If you can get them like instantly, it's the worst when those pop up and you're like logging on the DraftKings and it's like, you need to put in your email again, even though you're already logged into the DFS portion. Then we got to check your location, even though we already checked your location on the DFS portion. And then by then, like the vig is, or the edge is bet down.
Yeah. It's, I did a little bit. It's just like, it's such fish stuff. You know, it was like a week or so ago, Adam Schefter, I think it was on Levitan's podcast. He asked him, like, who do you think is going to go higher than expected? And he's like, A.D. Mitchell. You know, A.D. Mitchell is going to go higher than anyone expects. And it was like 2 days later, all this A.D. Mitchell FUD came out. They're like, he's slipping. He's got diabetes. He's got character concerns. And now, like, the smart money is him going after his line of, like, 27 and a half. So it's just like, even Schefter, who's, like, one of the most plugged-in dudes, like, it could be off on the trail of what's actually true.
Yeah. Those guys are, it's pretty rare when they're wrong, but I mean, this will be my one and only take that Jaden Daniels does seem a little too early at two to me. He seems kind of old compared to the other guys, but
yeah,
what do I know?
Yeah. And he, you know, you mentioned the Joe Burrow taking sacks. I mean, Jaden Daniels takes a ton of sacks too, which has been kind of one of the big red flag indicators for prospects. There's only like a couple prospects who have come into the league over the past like 10 years who have had success taking sacks at as high of a clip as Jaden Daniels did in college. And they're like the total outliers, like the Josh Allens of the world. And I think Joe Burrow was actually the other one who was an outlier relative to how many sacks he took. So yeah. But you can also see how people look around. They're like, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels could be the most electric rusher in the league. Let's just do that.
Yep, yep. What's his name? Anthony Richardson looked good in his few games too last year. And he's kind of similar, right? Like he was erratic, you know, kind of moved up on draft day kind of. So, yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't know. They get – That's kind of why I like Caleb Williams, because he's athletic, but he's not a runner. So like maybe he won't get hurt.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's in that like Andrew Luck tier, which is what the Bears front office needs, because they're so inept that they have to have just like a give me generational obvious platter. Player. Because if they have to make any decision on their own, it's probably going to be the wrong one. And like that ninth spot too, like they almost can't fuck it up. Because there's so many QBs and shit in front of them.
Right.
And it seemingly looks like a great wide receiver draft, that either you take a wide receiver or just whatever falls the next stud. Like it feels like that nine spot is a really good pick, but it's the Bears. It's the fucking Bears.
Yeah. I do think it would be very fun if they took Rome or one of those pass catchers, but it also seems like because they don't have a ton of ammo, they're like kicking off a huge rebuild, like trading back just makes so much sense too. It's like a really deep wide receiver class. So you trade back, get some extra pieces, take one of these early second round wide receivers. Like to me, that still seems like the most prudent thing, but who knows?
I think 9 out of 10 seasons, that's probably what they should do. And that probably might be what they do anyways. But like I said, it just feels like that spot is just, you're going to get a stud. Because also, especially if what's his name, Penix or whatever, jumps up into the top nine, that's like a gimme. That's like, now that's another spot that you're getting another, like you're basically getting like a top four position player because there's so many QBs going.
Did you happen to listen to the most recent Bet the Process pod? They had Cade Massey on.
No, I've been meaning to. I haven't caught it. I've listened to him and with Massey before. I think they had mine, but not the recent one.
Yeah, he was just talking about kind of like his experiences of, you know, when they've consulted for NFL front offices and kind of talking about how many cooks are in the kitchen when you're making these decisions. And he was talking about, it was a really cool conversation about how, like, if you were just making like model based decisions in the way like Rufus can with his bets, and it's just like, I'm going to trust the model, and over this huge sample size, like the model is going to outperform things. But then you think about how like NFL front offices work, where yes, they have these models, they have sophisticated stuff, smart dudes, but you have so many chefs in the kitchen, people meddling, people putting their thumbs on the scale. And then all of a sudden you get like this distorted outcome of like, what was actually the input that led to this thing? And it just made me appreciate how hard that must be to get a consensus. Whereas if you just did allow one person with a really good model to make those decisions over a long period of time, you'd probably come out ahead, but that is just not the way organizations work.
Too bureaucratic. I bet you're right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what we talked a long time ago about this, like just doing things more democratically. Like, right. Would you want, you know, like SpaceX run democratically, you know, where everyone in the company gets a vote on, you know, what rocket fuel you're supposed to use or something complicated? Yeah. You know, there's, I wonder how many people they have, and especially with the Bears. Oh man, I bet it's a disaster.
Well, and it's like, if you even think about it, and I know this is like a very simplistic way of distilling down a parallel, but it's like when, say I do a draft with other people, or say you had three or four of us that were going to do a draft together, and we're all trying to like do the picks. And I'm like, all right, Brian, I can't agree with you on this one, but I'm going to give you this pick. And then like, you know what? I'll take the next couple picks because I feel strongly. But it's like the team has to be the sum of its parts. Like there's a structure, and like what one person does is going to impact another part of the draft. And if someone wants to go quarterback early, but someone else really likes a late quarterback, it's like, well, we can't just keep drafting quarterbacks, where you get this like distorted outcome by trying to meet in the middle. And I bet that happens a ton, where it's like the owner's like, I really want this guy. And the scouts are saying, no, this is the best guy on the board. And it's like, okay, we'll get in the middle. We'll take Drake May because no one can agree on JJ McCarthy or Jaden Daniels. And it's like, well, then our scouting actually didn't even like Drake May. You know, like the not being able to make like holistic decisions that, I don't know, have like logical continuity to them.
I bet that's exactly what's happening. Cause you see the draft room cameras, and it's like those, you know, four square tables with like 50 guys there. So it's gotta be crazy. Like what it should be is more like Moneyball, where you're kind of on the same page, but you have one guy who's going to make the final decision, but they're all on the same page, you know, whether he's a stats guy or not, he's going to listen. You know, I imagine that's part of the reason why Bob Valgaris left the Mavs. You know, there's 50 people, and he disagrees probably with 90% of it. You know, and so fuck it, I'm leaving.
Yeah, they actually mentioned. Yeah, Cade mentioned that with the Harala Bob as it like pertained to that stuff and not being able to have your kind of input actually weighted heavily. Then it's like, well, what's the point? Like you just kind of want someone to like rubber stamp and be like, yeah, I'm not making a huge mistake. Right, Bob? Right. But you know, it's like, okay, what am I wasting my time? And then you like, I've referenced this on a couple of shows, but there was this clip from the Bills GM, Brandon Bean, who was joking around about how much they gave up to get Josh Allen. And he just said the quiet part out loud, which was, it doesn't matter how much we gave up, because if he hits, no one's going to give a shit how much we paid. And if he busts, I'm going to be gone. And it's like another illumination of how the incentives aren't aligned, because then some coach or GM wants to move up, and then maybe the owner or more other people in the front office are like, hey, we have to be here for the long run. Like you might just get canned, and it's not in the best interest of the organization to mortgage our future, but this GM's just trying to save his own ass.
Yep. Yeah. Which is why you need like Jerry Jones, kind of, you know, a Jerry Jones who knows what he's doing anyways, but
ideally,
Yeah, ideally, yeah, but someone who's going to make the final say, and he's going to be there forever. I 100% agree. Yeah, it's I don't care about the draft as much anymore. Like, obviously I'm going to watch this year, but I used to love draft day.
Yeah.
It was one of the best days of the year.
I do really think this is going to be one of the more fun first round drafts we've had in a while, just because there's so many quarterbacks, there's so many wide receivers and pass catchers, and it does seem like a decent amount of uncertainty in maneuvering in a way that I think it could all come together. Some surprise picks, some trades, lots of fantasy relevant players. Like, I think tonight will be a fun night.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. This will be a good draft.
Well, it is funny too, like, just to slightly continue this, like, how do organizations make decisions like this? You know, Bill Belichick for a long time was kind of the example of the benevolent, you know, dictator, right? At the top, where it's like, hey, I make the final decision on all of this stuff. But then you even started to see the limits of his powers, where it's like, dude, you just can't scout like wide receivers. You had a little money ball thing going where you trade back, collect assets, build around Brady, and it worked. But then you just whiffed over and over. And it's like, okay, you probably need to delegate that portion out. But when you have unilateral power like Bill, it's the whole reason he didn't get another job, because other organizations were like, we'll let you coach for us, but you can't run the show. And he's like, no, I'm not doing that. So it's like, even when you get a guy like that, there's still a shelf life to their relevance and their ability to stay ahead of the competition.
Yeah, that was the only position, though, really. Everywhere else was pretty good.
Yeah.
Even running back, like, he got a lot out of nobodies. And a few good years out of who was that running back they had years ago who was actually pretty, like, it was like a few years where they had a workhorse. And not committee, probably like a decade ago. Who was it? Why am I blanking?
Are you talking about running backs?
Yeah, Patriots running back, he would rack up some good fantasy numbers.
Well, Lawrence Mahoney, I remember he was one they drafted in the first round.
No.
Thinking about like LeGarrette Blount.
Not Blount, no.
Steven Ridley.
No.
Okay.
Let's just do this for the whole hour.
Yeah, this will be fun. What era are we talking about? Corey Dillon?
Corey Dillon. I thought it was Dillon. Corey Dillon. He had some big one. Cause he got him off the scrap heap, right? Or do they, so, not Michelle, come on.
Sorry, Michelle. Let's see what year Corey Dillon was selected by the Bengals in the second round of the draft. And then he must've swooped in and got him.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was nice. Mm-hmm. And of course Moss was just a gift.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All right. Enough reminiscing about the old Patriots days. Although lots of buzz around these parts for their pick tonight.
Before we talk about best ball, I want to just talk about DFS just briefly.
Yeah.
Because I've been, you know, reviewing Sims a lot more this year than previously. And when baseball first started, we talked about on the show when we had Adam on that the edge is a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that was kind of it was true, but it was kind of like a little bit of an aberration at the beginning of the year. So it looks like the edge is bigger than we were talking about, to recap from that show, where it looked like mostly like under 10% edge is about as big as you could get. It looks like most nights now it's getting more in the 15-25% range, which is a good thing. But having said that, with the kind of slow creeping to a winner take all payout structure on like the flagship GPPs, it's gotten to the point where, at least in my opinion, where like it's, I mean, I've said for years, like, you got to take first, you got to get lucky and take first. But like, mm-hmm. now it's the variance is just insane. So like, the closer you get, and Matt from SaberSim pointed this out on Twitter, where I posted like this issue about the more top heavy it gets. I said maybe that's what's going on with the tight ROI, and he said, no, what our study shows, the the more closer it gets to winner take all, the actual, the higher your ROI gets. So, yeah, I obviously he's probably right. And then I said, unsubscribing, how dare he contradict me. But I think the edge you gain in this new format structure, and the reason they do it is because people like 100K to first, right? And they think it just brings in more people like that. I think that's really the only rhyme and reason to it. But I think the edge you gain, the slight edge you gain from a closer to winner take all or top heavy tournaments is not worth it compared to the extra variance. So like nowadays, if you take top 10 every like third or fourth day, you're gonna go broke, like, unless you win. Where 2 years ago, 3 years ago, if you top 10 a decent regular amount, you know, like I remember when top 1% was like the big thing, big meta in DFS. Everyone was checking their top 1% finishes.
Yeah.
Back then, you still profit, even if you're not banking, you know, disproportionately to like what your edge is. I think now it's just so like if you could kind of like picture like a, like those ROI charts that Nelson would make for PGA.
Yeah.
You know, based on your edge, like what you can expect and how often you could go broke and stuff like that. Yeah. I've managed it, now it's just it would just be like this huge up and down, like someone whose heart is racing on a like beats per minute chart. And although yes, it's going up for your edge because of this top heavy effect that Matt pointed out, I think it's just not even close to worth it. And I wonder what some of the people in chat. Because also FJ Bourne tweets out like who he thinks is running good and running hot and running poorly. And I think he put Shady in there. And Shady's actually been winning pretty decently. And he put him as a running poorly. I think he did, didn't he? Oh, no, maybe that was an old one. Oh, go down to the tweet after like the other tweets.
March 9th.
Well, maybe I misread it,
but you just want anything that illuminates Shady just being a total luck box who's running hot, and anything that can confirm that for you,
right? That's mainly my point is look how fucking, and he has the Colts running poorly. He's hit a couple too,
yeah,
this year, but. Point being, you know, I guess this is a pity party for myself or other players who play MLB DFS all the time. It is the highest variance it's ever been, and DFS variance even before these changes was the highest variance in all of gambling. So. It's insane out there. I wonder, I mean, I bet a lot of, regs or, you know, people who are not professionals, but play DFS a lot are probably feeling that effect.
Gotcha. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's still, like a time horizon thing, right? Where it's just, you're saying now, even if you have the edge, it's going to take you a much bigger bankroll and a lot longer amount of time to realize that edge. And the way these contests are set up, you could just get wiped out before you ever realize it.
Yeah, for sure. And like, if you compare like SaberSim and Stochastic and whoever, if you pump their projections into the other person's sim, like it's gonna show you as being a poor player, right? So like Utakao is like the lowest in all the sims because he does his own he does his own projections. You know, like occasionally they'll, when they match up to the provider's numbers, they'll be up there. But almost always, like if you use Stochastic, you'll not be as good in SaberSim. If you use SaberSim, you'll not be as good in Stochastic.
But, and if Utacow had his own sims and used his inputs for the sims, he would grade out off the charts.
He would grade out off of charts. So I think these post-contest sims, they need some sort of dummy adjustment where I don't know specifically how to do it, but something like where if you, maybe each time there's a slight variation on projection and you're like, and you try to like regress the projection to like whatever the ownership and salary to kind of make it like neutral, if that makes sense. So you're comparing like upside and like lineup correlation and, you know, uniqueness and, and stuff like that, as opposed to just who was closest to our projections, would be a nice adjustment. Right. But what it shows too is like, okay, I mean, who has the edge then? Like, that's why I when Adam was on here, I think I said, like, it seems like there's a lot of variance trading going on.
Yeah.
And I still think that's definitely what's happening, because in theory, like, the best player should show up on all the post contest sims, but that's not what's happening. And when the edge is dwindling, you know, to like around this 20% level or lower, and the variance is increasing, you know, because like, you like, what are you going to say? Like, Stochastic's numbers suck, Cardi's numbers suck, SaberSim's numbers suck. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe one of them sucks, but they have a whole teams of people putting a lot of effort into it. It's probably not that bad.
You want a master sim to rule them all, a sim for the sims to decide it once and for all.
You could do that too. You could like rotate from three or four different sources, each role of the sim, stuff like that. But that would just be figuring out like who's best on any given night. Don't think it solves a variance issue at all. I don't know. And I'm done with my rant, but if anyone who in chat, any DFS pros have any thoughts on that, I'm happy.
It's an interesting thing because DMs. I assume too, like, you would probably make the trade off. Okay. Maybe a little bit more variance. If the game was growing, the prize pools were getting bigger, more new players were coming into the ecosystem. Like, if there was but if it's just all of the regs beating up on each other and there's more variance, then that becomes an issue for a pro player.
There was more overlay too. So like there'd be nights where you would, it's definitely been dwindling the last couple of years, but I'm saying a while ago, especially on like Yahoo or something like that, where like, let's say you'd risk $1,000. Like, as soon as the game's locked, you'd be winning like 1,100. You know what I mean? Like, right. Or whatever that number would be. Like, you'd be already neutral or above paying the rake because of some overlay on turn. And I think that's so big for keeping that variance down. And that's just not happening anymore, unless you are really hunting and not playing the main GPPs that everyone wants to win.
Yep. We found one of our favorite trolls and apparently Shady's biggest fan. Travis Petty says Shady can win every other day and still be running bad. Maybe he's that good. Checks in the mail from Shady. We got a Twitch comment here. Can't forget our Twitch heads over there on Brian's Twitch feed. Do you think you have a risk of ruin, Brick? That's a fun and heavy question.
Well, I mean, everyone does. I mean,
but I guess he's basically saying, like, wouldn't you scale your size down if you just hit an awful skid or your model was busto? Like, wouldn't you keep downsizing? Like, you wouldn't actually just size into going busto?
I mean, yeah, I think I mean, I'm not totally understanding his question, honestly. Like, I thought it more of it was, do you think, is the variance so high that you go busto, you know, X percent of the time?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it definitely is. I wouldn't be surprised if you see some big names just not play anymore.
You're basically saying if the variance gets ratcheted up, and you went on a streak that, again, looking at any of these sims, the things that Nelson looks at, like where you could just have such an epically bad run that you couldn't come back for it without having to scrounge up more funds for your bankroll, essentially.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That is almost a foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. Unless your bankroll is like $100 million or something.
Mm-hmm.
Something ridiculous. Like 10 million. I don't think that's enough.
Yeah. So he wants to know, why are you risking it then, Brian? You just like to live on the wild side? Or are you changing your contest selection and game selection?
Post contest sims now are like the new, you know, like slot machine, you know, where it's like, oh no, I did. I, you know, the Sklansky Buck slot machine. Let's see how I did yesterday. Ooh, third. I'm up there. My fictitious ROI was really good. How much did you get back? Oh, 20%.
Yeah. Shady says, I would prefer the variance to be reduced in the form of rake back or something, but the game structure stay top heavy enough to support decent ROI. Travis Petty laughs at the notion of rake back in DFS.
You can tell who's been around longer. I agree though, Shady. Yeah. Rake back or just lower rake. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I feel we've been through this with poker, right? I mean, they're not doing it. That's why Travis is laughing. It's never going to happen. Especially in this regulatory framework. They don't have enough competition, but that's what they need to do is lower rake or dramatically increase the rake back for their heavy users. They should have been probably doing this over a year ago. And so it's never going to happen. But like even the top heavy payouts, I think they need to roll that back to like two and a half years ago or whenever it was, where you could top 10 and get your 150 buy-in back, you know, which I mean, I would say like 75% of the time when I top 10, but don't take first or second or third, I don't get all my buy-in back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not 75, maybe less than that. But like, let's say, cause baseball usually costs like 2,300. Like yesterday I got eighth. I got like 1,900 back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that should be, you should be getting like $4,000 back if you top 10, 3,500, something like that minimum.
Yeah.
But
then doesn't this also dovetail with the combo that a lot of 150 maxers, because of, I assume, this volatility in these payout structures, are not putting 150 in, and they're kind of worse lineups. They're now cutting those off, only putting in 50, 75 or whatever they think are their strongest lineups.
A lot of guys doing that.
Yeah.
A lot of guys doing that.
Because it essentially doubles your risk of ruin window, right? Like if you cut your 150 entries in half, it allows you to play double the slates before you go busto.
If you can figure out, and I think you can, although I haven't, so but if you can figure out how to cut out like the bottom end of lineups that have a chance of being negative ROI, which everyone who won 50s now, a certain portion of their 150 are bad lineups. If you can cut down to 75 while removing a big chunk of those, you know, that's a big edge. Or at least, I mean, that's, I think, the direction a lot of people are going to go unless they do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chris says, how big of an exception do you think NFL is to these sim combos? Edge should be higher. No, edge higher and variance higher.
Yeah. That's what I would say. The edge is definitely higher in NFL because you got more donkeys and the field's bigger. So like the golf too, anytime. So like in the NBA this year was a perfect example of this, because normally the NBA is like $15 to $20 to buy in the flagship GPP. But this year, for some reason, they started doing the $4. And the $4 would have, what, like 60,000 entrants instead of 25,000 or 35,000, something like that. And you could see in the post-contest sim, your ROI goes from, you know, 40% to 90% in the top end of guys. Mm-hmm. So that just naturally happens because NFL's so big, right? Like, that's why we're talking about the NFL draft. We're talking about best ball. We got, because the NFL's so big, so you're gonna have more donkeys. But the larger the field, the higher the variance. And just like the problem is, they just kind of keep like edging along, and you know, just like they keep raising, like lowering the amount you get back for cash for cashing. Right. So instead of like doubling your money for any cash, they like lower that a little bit over the years, and they raise the amount of percentage of people.
What do you think is causing those?
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Those internal decisions, like those tweaks, like why are those changes being made on the back end, would you hypothesize?
My only hypothesis is they wanted 100k. Mm-hmm. Keep it 100k, so the guys are like, fuck, okay, let's raise the cash level a little bit, let's lower the cash payout a little bit, okay, let's, now we have to, well, we have to adjust the top, so now seventh place and eighth place don't get any money, you know, sorry, that's all going to first, you know. Yeah. And you just make, keep making these tweaks over 3 years, and you got basically a winner take all format.
Right. Yeah. Let's put a pin in this so we can talk a little best ball here as we promised.
Speaking of variants,
yes, all of those things. Let's now ratchet them up to 100. And talk best ball. I think a great starting point, because it has been a topic on Lulz over the years, something you've talked about before, of portfolio diversification. And I forget what it was the other day. I think we had a guest on within the past few months, and you guys were talking about when you see someone with multiple lineups in the top 10 of a leaderboard that they're playing suboptimally. And for a lot of people, that might be like, why would you say that? Like, they picked the best plays, they had high conviction, and they were rewarded. Sacrilegious wrote an article looking at BBM diversification among drafters, not specifically on a player level, but how diversified the overall teams were, which factors in, you know, combos of players like that, and found some interesting stuff with advance rates being higher for the more diversified cohort. The 100 least diversified drafters versus the top 100 most diversified. So I thought this was a really interesting subject. I'm going to drop the link to the article down below. But Brian, I know this has been a topic that you've thought about a lot, specifically for DFS, and I'm guessing best ball as well.
Yeah, we've talked about it on best ball. I'm wondering, Sacrilegious is in chat, was he inspired by previous Lulz episodes to come up with this?
Sacrilegious is on the record of being inspired, but by previous Lulz episodes. I don't know if this one was drawn specifically from that, but yeah, let us know in the chat here, Sacrilegious. But what did that track with your intuitive thought that you would have a higher advance rate across a 150 set of best ball drafts if you were more diversified in your overall team portfolio?
You know, I don't know if I would have naturally thought that that's for sure, actually. No. I used these what is it, Jicardi similarities or whatever he called. There's a whole bunch of different variations of this. Figuring out how to do this portfolio management, what I call it, well, is really, really hard.
Yes.
Like really, really hard. Like, I don't think anyone's been able to do it.
Well,
no offense. Maybe you pull it off, Zach.
No, did you see Brian? I saw someone, it was Sam Sherman in the Discord, put in a few usernames. I had 84th percentile diversification. And it makes so much sense because I drafted with so many different people at different times, different rooms, different points throughout the entire drafting calendar, you know, compared to even like Pat. You know, 31% diversification profile. They're Sacrilegious at 39. Davis, of course, just middle of the road with everything he did in BBM, 45th percentile. But yeah, I did. It was kind of validating too, because I thought what the conclusion I came to is the optimal thing from having streamed all my drafts with a bunch of people and then seeing this would be to draft with other people, 150, get lots of different diversification ideas from smart people, but not do them on stream. Like if you did those two things together, I think you'd have a pretty dynamite portfolio of teams.
Yeah. We will also, last year especially, we talked a lot about diversity, Pete. And on the app, we put the, you know, like you could see your exposures on players. And when you have that number right next to the dude, you're going to be like, I have too much Mims. I'm just going to not do it this draft. And you're going to get naturally more diverse for just paying attention.
Right.
And we didn't want to, like, specifically, I was saying I didn't want to get above like whatever 25% on one guy. I can't remember what I said, but yeah. we were pushing that pretty hard last year.
I think what's interesting about this, and you know, the title of the piece is, you know, stop diversifying your picks, start diversifying your teams. It's still most easy to conceptualize, for myself included, like diversity from a player level. It's like, oh, I have this much, whatever. But it is really thinking through, how do you make sure you're not drafting the same combos of teams or the same types of teams? Like if you did 150 zero RB teams where you're essentially having zero access to any of the top 15 running backs in the pool, like that in itself, you might have beautifully spread out exposures across all your wide receivers or whatever, but you have a highly condensed, undiversified structural portfolio. So there's all these different ways that I think diversity can come about in your portfolio.
Yeah. I think the kind of the holy grail of all this is more something we talked about, where you're getting this sort of leverage negative correlation idea from DFS and applying it to your best ball lineups. And the example I always give is like a handcuff running back and the starter. And so like, if you have 30% of a starting stud, and then you probably want, I don't know, you have to run the sims. That's why it's hard to do all this stuff, but you'd have to figure it out mathematically some way to get, like, let's say 6% of his handcuff in other lineups.
Yeah.
To kind of benefit from all the variance and, you know, your perceived edge on drafting that one guy for some reason.
For sure. Like, let's come up with a crazy hypothetical that would obviously never occur, but let's say Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts and everything we know about them, they were on the same team and they were going to be in a camp battle to figure out who got the QB1 spot for, let's say they're both on the Bills, Josh Allen versus Jalen Hurts. And we have no clue. It's like true 50-50. A lot of people would try to place their bets. they would say, you know what? I'm a Josh Allen guy. Like I'm saying he's going to win the starting job, or somebody to say I'm a Jalen Hurts. And in this example, it would be placing bets almost equally on both of them in a way. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but just where you benefit from both of those extreme outcomes, where again, in this hypothetical, one of them is a league winner. Like one of them is the guy you need, instead of trying to be like, well, if I'm just right, then I'm going to have 150 of my teams being correct, that you might be welcoming on more variance than you actually need to, in a way you could make your entire portfolio benefit.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of a simple way to do this is just in DFS anyways, but you could do the same thing in basketball, nothing stopping you, is just click that unique number up more. Just if you make it different, because it kind of naturally happens in these tournament structures that when one guy, you know, players do bad, then other players will go up ahead of them. Right. Yes. And you just kind of hopefully you have them, but they kind of have this. They're kind of all negatively correlated to some extent because of the structure of a GPP. The real, like, I don't know if this exists, but like the kind of stock market example would be where you have like a stock in an industry that if it does poorly, another stock in another industry does well.
Yeah.
But they're both expected to make money.
Right. Like right. Say you owned a bunch of movie theaters, but you saw COVID was coming. So then you bought a bunch of masks or ventilators. And it's like, either my movie business is going to keep coming along, or this industry is going to benefit, you know, exponentially, because my other one is going to be failing.
But also if nothing happens, like both of these companies are expected to at least earn 5% or something, whatever the market average is, you know?
Right. Right.
So like you can't essentially you're almost completely risk adverse. If nothing happens, you get like a modest 6%. If something good happens, one goes down, but the other one dramatically goes up.
That was like, I mentioned this one in my best ball preview, but like one of my kind of takes last year in drafts was like, there was so much ambiguity with the Dolphins running backs. All three of them were going in the double digit rounds. And I was like, one for sure, and probably two of these guys are just going to smash their ADP. And yeah, one of them will probably be the odd man out, but I'm just going to take one of these guys in every draft, because I think like even worst case expectation, I'm going to get a small return on this investment, even if it's just like a true 50-50 backfield, or you get some outsized windfalls. And then to your point, or you could just get just uber smashes where two of them get hurt and then one of them becomes the lead back, but you're not ever having to pay like really ridiculous prices to capture that big upside. Whereas when you take a running back in the first round, like the outcome you need is obvious. Like there is no benefits, anti-fragility with like that pick. You just need it to pay off.
Yeah. And I think the benefit, I agree with all that, but the benefit too with best ball is you have whatever we have, 4 months or whatever. You don't have to force it right off the bat. You could maybe make it up with additional information as the season goes on, where Gus Edwards gets hurt, but maybe he's going to make it on opening day or maybe not. Well, you know, now that you have 35% Gus Edwards, obviously this isn't going to probably be a good example this year, but now that you have 35% Gus Edwards, you probably should get that handcuff or whatever situation in your portfolio because you already have that other piece. You know, it kind of does it for you.
Yeah,
you're. I had a joke I was going to do on that graph, but it doesn't matter. Skip it.
This one?
No, the one before. There was a guy named Hog Boners or something. Bone Hoggers.
Bone Hoggers.
Wasn't that like Hog Boners? High school team? All right.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was hogging all those boners. no, I was going to agree with your point of how like, you know, you look at how some of these players finished out, and this kind of dovetails with the scroll the F down stuff and how it becomes really powerful toward the end, because you're going to have a clue of like, all right, Puka, 30% of drafts, Kyren Williams, 20%, Zach Moss, who I used in an example of my best ball mania, he was drafted in 13%, I believe, of drafts, once you get that information and you know there's a finite amount of drafts that can even boost that ownership, at that point, I want to get as overweight as possible. Like, that is where I want to push the edge, not at the beginning of just being like over the entire course of the year, because then you're getting a double whammy, right? Like, your margin for error is even greater, because it's like, even if I'm wrong, well, it was such a cheap cost and no one else in the field even has him, versus if you're taking a major stand that the market is directly opposed to over the full sample of drafts, that's where it gets a little scarier from a risk standpoint.
Yep. Yeah. Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua would have been a good example of this. Mm. If you had like a bunch of Cooper Kupp and then he gets hurt, I don't remember what time he got hurt, but
yeah.
And then you could take, I mean, you'd have to have the knowledge that, you know, Puka's going to, you know, get a lot of playing time and stuff, but, and you could get him and he's barely drafted. Like what a fantastic piece of your portfolio that would have been.
Yeah. And I've already heard, I don't feel comfortable, you know, blowing up their spot, but I know some ownership models are definitely in the works for BBM5. So I think that's going to be something we're going to have, you know, more accessible to the player pool, at least the Sicko player pool, of kind of rolling ownership percentages. And we'll, it'll be interesting to see the kind of like leveraging and outmaneuvering that goes with that. Almost like from a GPP, you know, where it's like Sunday, it's like, this guy's 5%. And then everyone knows he's 5%. So now he's 20%. Like, I wonder if we will get that in best ball, you know, when talking heads like myself are like, yeah, no one's drafted this guy. And the next thing you know, he comes in, yep, just as drafted as everyone else.
Yeah. I think the ownership projections are pretty easy in best ball to do. I haven't done mine yet, but I don't think it would be too hard because that ADP is pretty predictive in position, ADP in position,
yeah,
and you're going to get pretty damn close. And I got an email or DM Rudman, but they might also release every month the data dump. And if they do, like, you don't even need ownership projections. Just use whatever's the actual data.
Yeah. 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 So I think, and again, that data, like having ownership, like week one of the contest, it's like, who cares, right? Like, it's going to be as it gets closer to it filling that's when you really start to say, all right, this painting is almost fully done. And now I don't know how to land this analogy out of painting, but you see what I mean? The puzzle pieces are mostly together. And now you can actually take advantage of the information we do know.
Yeah. It's like those like on Twitter, they'll show like a painter up close and it looks like he's just making, you know,
yeah,
random movements, and then they pan out and it's like a beautiful tiger picture. Like, oh,
that's going to be my portfolio. A beautiful tiger picture. You're going to be watching my stream drafts and being like, what is just this mess of random colors and incongruent strokes? Then you're going to zoom out. And you're going to see this beautiful portrait of a lion that Peter created across 150 drafts.
Look at that mane.
You also, speaking of getting ready for best ball, I mentioned I have a new video up on the Deposit Kingdom channel, kind of going through month by month these specific edges to push. And like, I made this one because I think other people would find it helpful, but also as like a very jarring reminder to myself of like, it's so easy to hop in drafts, kind of turn your mind off, just vibe it out, you know, do the Davis Matic and perfectly draft, you know, 8.5% of everybody, but really trying to be intentional of like, this is when I'm drafting. These are the edges I should be pushing. And so it's kind of constructed to where you could bookmark it, come back to it. I have it based on month, you know, April when the contest opened, May, June, July, August. And you can go back and revisit like, okay, these are the things, the specific edges. Oh, now we're in August. All right. It's time to look at these ownership percentages and really start grabbing these scroll the F down guys. So check out that video on the Deposit Kingdom channel. Have gotten lots of good feedback on that. And then Brian, I know you have on Brick 75, the HUD is up and running right now.
Yeah, we have an update. But before that, that gave me an idea too. It would be nice to have a little cheat sheet of all the like obvious tips that, you know, like just stuff we're randomly talking about. Cause when you're drafting,
that's what the video is meant to be. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I need like a page right in there, right in front of me while I'm drafting. Hey, dummy, make sure you do X, Y, and Z.
Sounds like you, maybe in the great future, that's actually a job. Brian can hire, you know, a best ball consort and they just kind of stand over your shoulder and they whisper, "Don't forget, Brian, it's time to stack up. It's time to scroll the F down." I mean, that sounds like the real thing you're actually looking for.
Well, you got to do that. I've watched some of your drafts too, where like I watched one with like you and Spags, or maybe I think it was Spags, and you're like, "Nah, I got to start scrolling down here."
You know?
And if you're not thinking about it, you're gonna just blindly just go to a guy who's gonna be 100% picked. And at this point in the season, you can kind of go whatever. But
and it's fascinating too, because like there are truly so many things you can accomplish in a draft, or something that you think is an edge, and then you're having to weigh, you know, which is the bigger edge to press. Like, I'll give a really simple example. I was wrapping up my final big board drafts. Tank Dell, after the trade to the Texans of Stephon Diggs, he became much cheaper. And I thought like his price was now inefficient and the kind of guy I wanted to target a ton at this new price before the contest closed. I also think like the tight ends were really mispriced. And you know, Tank Dell's falling late into the fourth, and then like Sam Laporta was also there as well. And I'm sitting here wrestling. I'm like, which of my objectives do I accomplish? The one where I think I want to get overweight on this specific guy, or where I want to press this elite tight end edge that I don't think should be here in these drafts? Either like you find yourself in those spots where even when you're on top of it and you kind of know the edges you want to push, you're then saying like, which one is more valuable in this spot? And it's often hard to know which one actually is.
The rough life of a hand builder.
I mean, when we're doing these drafts, Brian, despite what you're trying to do with this this app here, I thought I'd show a quick screenshot of what people can get in the HUD. Brian and I battled it out in a two-person draft earlier as I was just getting this up and working on my computer. But tell the people kind of what they're looking at here as you hovered over my username in the draft.
Yeah, so obviously, the idea is ripping off the old poker HUDs, just information on your opponents. And it is last year's BBM 3. It was a 3 last year or 4?
4. Yeah.
4 data. So if someone's played one or more drafts in BBM 4, then they'll have data. And the static data, you could see like right above Pete's name, Pete's handle, is his standard deviation is 11.1, and how many drafts he did. He did the whole 150. Mm-hmm. So you could see, because sometimes guys will have a red badge, and they only did like 15 drafts last year too. So I don't know if that gives you information, but certainly seeing someone's never had a draft, or they've only done one or two drafts, might tell you what to expect, you know, out of them. But if they do have data, we have all these categories that you could kind of hover over the standard deviation or draft, and it'll pop up. And it gives the average of all the guys who max entered last year. That's average 150. That's everyone who 150. What was the average, you know, the first pick, when did their first pick go on average, first RB on average, for, you know, standard deviation after 167, how much closing line value did they get, value hound ratio, which is how often they like what percentage are they taking players of where it was a value pick, and the value pick is just one spot or more of ADP. So if you're picking, you know, 70 and you got a guy at 65, right, that's a value pick, right? And anything after wouldn't be. So, like, what's the ratio of value? And I don't know if this is surprising or not, but the average of all the 150s is exactly 50-50. So they're not, like, hunting for value.
Interesting.
And then you were more likely to not hunt for value.
Which I think some of it was probably thrown off by some, like, huge outlier drafts, like, with Sean, there were drafts where we literally grabbed a wide receiver 60, 70 picks ahead of ADP. I think my personal tendencies are way closer to value hounding, but I bet a lot of those drafts kind of really skewed my actual true profile.
The perceived good players, though, I could be wrong. I could go, I have the database on my site for free too if anyone wants to go look at it. It looked like a lot of the good players do not hunt for value.
Mm.
Just, you know, not just you. Like, I think pretty much everyone was under hunting for value. Closing line value, this is really debatable. And you'll see some huge closing line value on like J-Mac and who else? Autoed it.
Yeah,
because they autoed it. So they're always gonna, if there's any value on the board, they're like auto taking it, right? So
if you wanted, here's the pro tip: if you wanted to be king of the value hound ratio, you'd auto 150 on the opening day of the contest. That's how you would be king, because you'd have the most mispriced ADPs. The reason I know this, Brian, is because in BBM2, one of my drafts got flagged on the underdog radar. It was the opening night of the contest. I was in Miami. I registered, fell asleep. The entire team got auto drafted, and it had just such insane ADP values on it. And who knows, maybe that was just unique to that year, but like, that's where you're going to have the chance to get the biggest jumps in picks, is from the opening night. So I do really think that's how you'd become king of the value hound ratio.
I bet the opposite. I would take the last day of the year.
See, because, but I just don't think you have enough time for those players to jump up enough.
Well, because the thing is, though, if it's the last day, they're locked in basically whatever it is. So if right. you have, you know, player X whose ADP is 65 and you get him at 80, you just locked in 25 spots of closing line value. Where if you do yeah. that on day one, who knows yeah. what the final ADP is going to be.
Right. And I'm just saying, I think you have more chances for players' ADPs to seismically shift over the course of 4 months than you do for players in the last draft before the season to continually let guys fall. Because in a typical draft, you are only going to see a handful of big fallers.
Yeah. Your logic is 100% accurate. I think but the only difference I'm saying is, like, because of it's the last day, every single guy you take as value hound is just like free locked in. You don't even have to think about it. So if you do what J-Mac did and just auto draft on the last day, the last couple days, like every single pick, you're going to be getting like one or two value points every single pick almost.
What are the odds that when J-Mac, do you think J-Mac's going to start wearing this as a badge of honor? Was he the number one in the value hound ratio? Isn't that up on Brick 75?
Yeah. That's what I see.
Well, and it was Settlement too, right?
I don't remember. But yeah, it should be it'll take a second to load because there's a lot of players and
snapback Jack being at the top by just running circles around everyone with a 73% value hound rate.
Well, that's not sorted. See if he's still at top.
Oh. Okay. You're right. Beretta, he's third. All right. And where is,
but closing line value is probably the, should be there somewhere. Did I not load it up on that?
Oh, there it is. Closing.
It is.
It's Jack. That is insane. That is hilarious.
And the reason why J-Mac wouldn't be on there is because he probably ranked his players based on whatever his rankings are.
His personal rankings.
Personal rankings. So it won't get as much value. Where Jack obviously just used ADP and probably put some cap limits on the positions. And so he got it. Scroll the F down. You can imagine what that is. It's the number of guys per draft that after round, I have to look, but let's just say round 15, that
this 167 cutoff here.
It's probably the 167 cutoff, but I'm not sure. That the user scrolled down X amount of picks to pick somebody. I can't remember what X is either. I did this like 2 months ago, but like 15, 20. And dude, so how
this makes so much sense too, because JGFC is a guy who's in all of my drafts and he always goes and gets his favorite sleepers early in the late rounds, like round 15, like he's starting to take the guys that are not getting drafted. And I see lots of familiar names up here after
we see Sacrilegious there at two. Oh,
we got Liam here. Paul is a grinder. I was inverted. So yeah, that definitely checks out based on how these guys draft.
And so the averages of the 152, doesn't mean that's the sharp thing. It's actually probably not the sharp thing, right? We're not at peak best ball meta here yet. There's still new tools and stuff. So I wouldn't try to get exactly at 150. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely worth, especially like seeing where they're drafting people, how often, you know, where they're taking QBs and when they take their wide receiver first too. Cause you could easily see like, oh, I'm really going much later on wide receivers than the guys who are all max entering, stuff like that. And this should help you, especially where you're near the turn of a draft, about what that person's likely to do. Because if they have a low value hound ratio and a high scroll the F down ratio and a high variance, and you have the next QB on the board or something, you could probably wait. Right. Because they're not, unless of course they, you know, they run out of time in auto draft and you don't want to risk that. But like, let's say it's the second or third, so you don't even have to worry about that. You could then take, you know, a wide receiver that he might take and wait for your quarterback, because you know he's not going to like just value hound taking the top ADP B guy, because you know there's guys who look at that ADP and they're saving 20 spots of ADP and they can't help themselves. They have to select it, you know?
Oh, trust me. It's a powerful thing. Even though, and this is again why doing some of this offseason research, and one of the things in the Scroll the F Down, and you know, Sacrilegious had his chart and Leone had one too, of looking at when ADP value ceases to matter as a predictor of fantasy points. And even though it's like completely marginal, if a guy's going in the 15th round or the 17th round, the value hound in you still wants to be like, I gotta scoop it up.
Yeah. It's like, because it's like all these years of draft day where when your favorite team gets the first rounder who fell to the third round, and you're like, man, my team did so good that third, they got a first rounder in the third, basically. It's the same concept, you know, like where you're seeing that you got Josh Jacobs, which actually turned out to be an absolute stud last year, hindsight 2020. But you know, when you get 30, 40 points of value on Josh Jacobs, you just got to take him. And, you know, but, and it also works both ways. If you got a value hound in front of you and your quarterback sitting there, you know, one or two of the top spots, and you're on the turn, like you gotta take him. You can't risk it, because this guy is gonna take one of those top three guys probably.
Yep. This is fun to play around with. I checked it out when you first posted it, but I hadn't messed around with all the filters. Like, I just sorted by average running back build, and you see Dan Zak up here, Pemper Prince, the second fewest amount of running backs on average, 4.28, which checks out because he did a ton of hyper fragile stuff. He's on record of, you know, starting with three running backs within the first 3 to 4 rounds, maybe adding one more and then just being done. Like, that was his preferred way to build. So you can really dial in to some tendencies here with stuff. And then I bet average wide receiver build, I was wondering if he was high up here as well. Maybe tight ends. He was the guy that was going to do a ton of tight ends. Yep, there he is, fourth for average time build as well.
Yeah. That's good. That's big information. Now, you also have, like, people change from year to year. And if they do the data drop, I'm going to update it, right? So I'll put this year's info and then the combined info, probably something like that. We'll figure whatever people want. But like, yeah, if you're on the turn and you're in a tight end's there, you can't wait. This guy's, you know, got a chance, a higher than likely chance compared to your average that he's going to take the tight end. But if it's an RB, now you can wait. So you can find all sorts of different ways. And if you get good enough and start memorizing their tendencies, which happen in poker, like in poker, the regs, you like almost don't even have to look at their info after a while. Like you start memorizing their VBAT, you know, rebat percentage. Yeah. And so you might be able to go 3 or 4 spots out from the turn and then make your decisions on whether to pick the guy or risk it and wait based off of that.
Yeah. Rod, does it only have data for 150 maxers? Yes. Right. Or does it have everything?
This on my site, I only put the top 150 to for free people, but the app is everybody. If you had one draft, if they did one draft, it's on there.
Yeah. Many are saying that this is the new cactus. You know, Underdog, if you draft 150 teams, they send you a little cactus as a gift. Getting your team, your stats up on brick75.com. This is the new cactus. You draft 150 solely for the clout of getting to sort and see your value hound ratio. Yeah, this is going to be fun stuff. We're going to have plenty to dig into over the course of the summer. Definitely check out my video over on the Deposit Kingdom channel if you're looking for a good primer to get you ready. BBM should be dropping, you know, shortly after the draft concludes, and I fully expect to be able to draft Best Ball Mania teams on Best Ball Breakfast on Monday. So I'll have a big kickoff stream for that. We also have tonight our Ship Chasing Round 1 draft stream. That's going to kick off around 7:45 p.m. Eastern. We're going to have a bunch of guests swinging by and some big giveaways by Underdog. They let us take higher and lowers on 5 different draft picks. And for each one we're correct, we're getting about $500 of Best Ball Mania 5 credit. So potentially up to $2,500 of credit giveaways. You got to be watching live. If we hit those picks, we'll spin the wheel for people in the chat. So should be a fun few days here on tap with the draft and the launch of all these contests. Definitely check out brick75.com. Get that app, get there loaded so you can start profiling your opponents when these contests open. Anything else from you, Brian?
MMA Saturday, I think. I'll have ownership up. That's pretty much it, I think.
Awesome. Thank you to everyone hanging out in the chat. Also, be sure to check out Sacrilegious's article over on Legendary Upside. I'll put that in the show notes. I think it's some good food for thought, and I believe I saw in the chat there's going to be a part two of that coming as well. So looking forward to that. We will see you guys next time on Lulz. For Brian, I'm Pete. Peace.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.